Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm thrilled to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned. My guest will be Chef Daniel Belud, the award-winning chef and restaurateur who is responsible for over 10 award-winning restaurants in New York and around the world. And I'm really thrilled to have him on, tell us what he's been up to. But before I do, of course, I want to share a recipe with you, some things that are going on in the news, and share with you my experience on Tuesday up in Albany. This Tuesday, I participated with Food and Water Watch and a host of other nonprofits that care about what's in our food up in Albany to lobby our assemblymen and senators in Congress to help push through the bills that are pending to label genetically modified foods in New York State. And as many of you know, Vermont has passed the law, and Rhode Island and Massachusetts have passed laws that are contingent on New York passing a law. However, there is also simultaneously a bill pending in Washington, also known as Monsanto's Dark Act, that would prevent GMO labeling, mandatory GMO labeling that states vote in, that would actually make that illegal. It's a bill that is being pushed through by large food corporations and the Grocery Manufacturers Association, that would make it illegal for states to establish their own laws. And it is completely against what the majority of the U.S. public wants. And just a little back history for those of you that don't know, genetically modified organisms, which was introduced into our food system back in the 1980s, has really taken over. More than 90% of all processed foods contain genetically modified ingredients. In most countries, in many countries, the genetically modified ingredients are banned. And where they're not banned, they're at least required to be labeled. In this country, for some reason, our government protects and supports money-making businesses over the good of the people. And we need to rally together and get angry and let our government officials know that this is not okay with us. We have the right, just like everybody in Europe, to know what is in our food. It's ridiculous. And the part that makes me even more upset is that all these food manufacturers who make products in Europe have the capability of making the same exact product genetically modified free. And they do that for the European market because they don't want to have to label. So what labeling would do would not only inform us, but it will push these food companies to stop using genetically modified ingredients because they know people don't want it. So it's a win-win for us, and we really need to mobilize. You know, I was really glad to be there, but I have to say I was disappointed at the showing. I mean, there were maybe, 300 people there. And we need a lot more. We need thousands and thousands of people to show up to really show our government that this is important to us. We have to stand up against all the money that Monsanto and the Grocery Manufacturers Association and other corporations have. And we do not have that kind of money to level the playing field. But what we do have is people power. And so we need people to really get behind this and let them know. So anyway, I was in Albany Tuesday, felt great. I met with my assemblyman who I had met with last year when I was up there. Last year he was really on the fence. He didn't really know much about it. And this year he was much more informed. And this year he said he would support the bill to label genetically modified ingredients. And that was Assemblyman Ed Ra. So I'm really happy about that. Jack Martin's already is a supporter. And so we have a lot of support in up in Albany, and we just really need to push this through. And this is the year that it really could happen. So anytime you have an opportunity to make your voice known, please sign the petition, write your assemblymen, your senators, and let them know how important this is. And also let the people in Washington know how important it is to prevent the DARK Act from passing. Okay? Thanks. So what else is going on? Oh, an exciting thing. There is now a new plant-based foods association that is being formed. It's being headed up by Elizabeth Kucinich, who is the wife of Dennis Kucinich, who was running for president last time. And anyway, this Plant-Based Foods Association is a new trade group that is really leveling the playing field and will join the ranks of the beef, pork, and poultry industries to lobby Washington. And this, you know, became apparent that the need was there when manufacturers of almond milk and soy milk wanted to be able to provide these milks to children in schools who do not eat dairy, and they weren't allowed to. They weren't allowed to call it milk. And same with cheese alternatives. You know, they're not allowed to call it a cheese substance because it's not cheese. And so this Plant-Based Food Association is going to be in Washington and trying to change the standards of identity with the Food and Drug Administration so that they can offer some dairy-free alternatives on the market. So that's exciting. I'm sure you also all heard about the recall on Applegate chicken nuggets. And not only is there plastic in the chicken nuggets, but it was really shocking to find out that Applegate is owned by Purdue. So, again, it's just, you know, when we trace the origins of our food, we can get really shocked. So it's important for us all to be informed and know what is going on and who's making our food. There's also a petition on my website that I'd like to let you all know to sign to keep antibiotics out of meat, also for the GMO labeling, and also to reduce food waste. So every week I put up petitions on my website that you can go on and sign at ieatgreen.com and participate and let your voice be known. I want to share with you some events going on in and around the city before I share my recipe with you. This Friday night, tomorrow night, there's a screening of This Changes Everything, which is a documentary based on Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything. And it is a great, great documentary that portraits communities all across the country and the world that are on the front lines. And it's, you know, really addressing climate change and what we need to do to transform our current state of being to become more aware of climate change and what we can do to better the whole system. So that is a free event tomorrow night at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Central Nassau in Garden City. Hope to see you there. March 11th, tomorrow night also, there's an evening and dinner with Jean Bauer, who was my guest last week. I think it might be sold out. It's at the Jiva Mukti Cafe in New York City. Jean is the president of a farm sanctuary, and it's a fundraiser. My experience with some of these things, even if they're sold out, if you go, there's very often no shows. So if it's something that you're passionate about, show up and try to get yourself in. March 12th, there's a free organic gardening workshop out on Long Island in Huntington Station. You can find out more information about that also on my website. March 12th is the 4th Annual Massachusetts Urban Farming Conference, and that takes place at Northeastern University outside of Boston. It's an all-day event. It's very reasonably priced, so I recommend if you are in that area or if you can get up there and you have the interest to go. March 13th, this weekend on Sunday, is the Just Food Conference. Every year they bring together hundreds of community leaders and organizers and food advocates to do panels and workshops and lectures and networking. It's just a great event. It's all day long up at Teachers College, Columbia University. Again, all of these things are on my website if you want to find out more about it. March 16th, Slow Food New York City is helping sponsor an evening, an intimate discussion with Chef Michael Anthony, who's also the author of Vias for Vegetables and the executive chef of Gramercy Tavern and Untitled. And this event is being brought to you by Enlightened Eaters and also the James Beard Foundation and the Natural Gourmet Institute. So it's a free event, but you do need to RSVP, so check that out. Sunday, March 20th, is the third annual Long Island Film and Food Feast. This is a great event. I am very involved in the organizing of this event through my local Slow Food chapter, Slow Food North Shore. And we partner with the Cinema Arts Center, which is a great arts movie theater in Huntington. And each film, we have like 8 short documentaries that we're showing, anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes. And paired with the film is food that is highlighted in the film and a speaker. So it's a great, great event. And it's it's $55 for members and $65 for everybody else. Really worthwhile. You'll have a full, 6-course meal and have some great educational films at the same time. What else is going on? So many things. Here's a great evening at St. John the Divine on March 31st. It's an evening of witness, a night of discussion and music, curated by Anna Lappe. From Small Planet Institute, and this is a great event. So if you are in the city and you're interested, that's March 31st. Also on that night, there's a screening at the Sustainable Institute at Molloy College of The True Cost, which is a story about clothing and where our clothes come from and people who make it and the impact the industry is having on our world, and includes a free vegan buffet. It's $5 suggested donation. And like I said, there's so many events coming up. This always happens, in the winter I'm really searching for events, but once spring starts coming around, the events are so numerous. So check out my website at IE Green for more of these events. And now I want to share with you a recipe. This is a gluten-free stuffed mushrooms. I do use the butter in this, but if you wanted to make it vegan, you can certainly just substitute olive oil where I put butter. And this is for a party, so I made 50 mushroom caps that I brushed off and removed the stems. Then the stems get chopped up, and I use 2 cups of the chopped stems in the recipe, 3/4 cup of chopped celery, 2 cups chopped onions, 1 cup chopped red pepper, 3 tablespoons chopped garlic, 1/2 cup of red wine plus another 1/4 cup for cooking, 2 tablespoons tamari, 1 teaspoon thyme, 1/2 cup chopped parsley, 1/2 cup chopped walnuts, 1/4 cup olive oil, salt and pepper to taste. I used a cup of gluten-free breadcrumbs. Now, if gluten-free is not an issue for you, you're welcome to use any breadcrumbs you'd like. And I used 1/4 cup of Parmesan cheese. If you want to make this vegan, you can use some nutritional yeast in place of the Parmesan cheese. So I started by sauteing the onions in olive oil. And when they were translucent, I added the celery. And after about 5 minutes, I added the garlic, the peppers, and the chopped mushroom stems. Cooked those up for a little bit. Then I added the walnuts, the parsley, the thyme, and the tamari, and 1/2 cup of the red wine. Cook that for another few minutes. Then add the breadcrumbs and the Parmesan cheese, or the gluten-free breadcrumbs. Salt and pepper to taste. And then you're just going to stuff the mushroom caps with the filling. I grease a baking pan or cookie sheet with butter or oil, and pour the remaining 1/4 cup of wine around the mushrooms. If you'd like, you can put a small pat of butter on the top of each of the mushrooms that will melt and cook in as the mushrooms are baking, which is really great. Or you can spray it with a little olive oil if you're keeping it vegan, and bake at 375 for about 20 minutes until they are all, the mushroom caps are soft and everything is hot and comes together, and then serve it immediately. And they're delicious. They're easy to put together, and they're really perfect for a party. So enjoy, and as always, I'd love to hear from all of you how you like them if you make the recipe, so let me know. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Chef Daniel Boulud. He is the owner of the award-winning Michelin star restaurant Daniel, as well as a whole restaurant empire that he runs in New York City and around the world. Originally from Lyon, France, he has been in New York for over 30 years, and he is really rocking the food scene. Chef, are you with me?
Hello, Bhavani. Yes. How do you do?
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to have
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And good morning to your listener.
Thank you. So you have been in New York rocking the food scene for over 30 years. And, you know, things have certainly changed from when you started. Can you share with us a little bit of how you see the changes, what your assessment of our current state of eating is, and whether or not you are missing some of the old-time nostalgic ways of the past?
Well, I think for the last 30 years, New York and America have just been kept evolving with food, with supply, with suppliers, with farmers, with certainly with also the quality of our staff, the quality. I mean, I remember when I arrived in America or in New York, they were, for the French restaurant, they were mostly French people working there. And today, I think in all my restaurants, it's mostly American people working there. And so those American chefs now, it's almost like the third generation of young chefs who have starting to make a name for themselves and has really contributed to the evolution of food and also the wide range of interest in food. Today, anything can be possible and anything can be successful with it and anything can taste very good. It's just a question of having a quality person in charge of that program. I mean, I know that you pay a lot of attention to vegan, vegetarian, and also local ingredient and farmers, and for us, I think it has always been a way of life to make sure that, you know, we embrace excitement of cooking with things who are totally natural and logical. I mean, I've been cooking French cuisine, but always with an eye on evolution. And we keep evolving, and I'm always amazed at how exciting the present is. But it's every year I'm excited about the present, so it's good.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I've done some traveling, and, you know, as a slow food chapter leader, you know, every other year I try to go to the big conference that happens in Turin, Italy. And so I've traveled quite a bit around Italy, and, you know, I know they're really strict with their rules over there. You know, it's like you don't put any cheese with a seafood, God forbid. You know, you want Parmesan cheese on your clam sauce, that, you know, they have a conniption. And I know French cooking, you know, has had a lot of rules too. How do you deal with that now in the current trends where there's so much fusion going on between the different?
I think rules are important, and I think America is little by little defining rules as well. Even if the cooking kind of is fusion and confusing and fusion sometimes. I think today, well-educated chefs have a focus on a background of information, a focus, a training with chefs who already respected rules. And so I think it gives them a certain awareness of in the rule. And I think I was born and raised on a farm and in France. And there was many things. We had many rules because we knew the effect and the impact of doing certain things and not, for example, I mean, eating raw vegetable, not every raw vegetable is good for you, good for your system, good for your body, but unless you're a nutritionist and you really know exactly what's very good, there's many things in France we were very careful eating raw, and we wanted to rather cook that than eat it raw, especially in the cabbage family, in the turnip family, in the and there's certain vegetable also who are just some root vegetable who are absolutely not good unless you cook it, because there's no sugar coming out of it unless you cook it.
Right. And the nutritional value is better for you once it's cooked as well. Where in a lot of other vegetables, you know, the nutritional value very often you hear goes down when you cook a vegetable, but in some vegetables it actually comes up.
Mm-hmm. Voilà. And so I think the evolution of talent, the evolution of talent make for the evolution of an amazing country today where, and all over in the past, you know, you couldn't go to South Carolina or Minnesota or Tennessee and really find a great restaurant. And today you really find amazing young chef doing an amazing work with local farmers. So it really is, when I started 30 years ago, it didn't exist, but I think we had kids coming from all over America coming to work in New York City or in Chicago or in the big city to try to learn how to cook. I think today it's still relevant because it's important for them to, it's like, you know, as a French chef, if you never work in a big city like Paris or Lyon, where there's a concentration of talent and a concentration of opportunity to learn, it's okay, but it's going to be different. And but today, at least, the opportunity for them to learn anywhere, or at least to start cooking, in a very good base. And that I think, is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you're talking about learning the rules, is really so helpful. Very often, even, you know, like as a dancer, even a hip-hop dancer, very often they start with ballet. You know, you need to learn some of the foundation,
it
and the structures.
If you're a painter, a sculptor, a musician, a dancer, a chef, there is foundation to learn. And I think, to me, I have the French foundation, but I respect all foundation of every cuisine. And it's definitely sometimes an aspiration, but it's also a guiding rule.
Right. Right.
But that does not mean you cannot be creative. We're very creative, and I do things today which I would have never thought of doing 10 years ago. But I feel it's really spontaneity and creativity is not something. I mean, there wouldn't be creativity if there was something created new. So, in a way, there is a sense of you know, willingness to keep creating.
Right.
I think it's very exciting.
Right. Now, I heard you have a young son, and he's experiencing food-related experiences for the first time all over the place.
Yes.
Can you share with us, you know, how you're guiding his diet and his food discovery, and what's most important to you and your wife nutrition-wise?
He's 2 years old, so he has been eating solid now for a year. And at the beginning, of course, we puree everything, but my wife is extremely organized with his diet. She has a chart and a calendar, and she writes down every meal. She weighs down the meal and write down the meal he has. But she also, she make him eat everything. And I live right above the restaurant, so my pantry is the restaurant.
And, lucky you.
I have, absolutely. I have access to any fish, any seafood, any meat, any vegetable, even truffle, caviar, if I want to put him. But I make him taste everything. Sometimes it's not in the food. Sometimes it's separately from the food just to see his reaction. But it's very interesting. Color is not so much of an issue, but still. But if there is an association of color and taste, and he was something off, you will know right away because he will not really like it. But in general, we try to always have a diet where in the morning, it's a diet made of cereals and fruits, and fresh fruit and cooked fruits, and cereal and yogurt, yogurt mostly, or a little bit of porridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon, it's often a diet of protein, so it could be fish, meat, chicken, and two vegetables at least. And two or three vegetables, but two. It's better to not have too much and see how much he likes it. And then in the evening, is mostly vegetarian.
Ah.
But what my wife do is then she will make batch of cooking. Like yesterday, she was making a batch of sweet potatoes and also a batch of broccoli rabe. And then, of course, she will process the meat or chop it. Not and eat a little bit chopped, so it's easier. But she will process the meat into a blender, and she'll do a good batch. And then she has ice cube, very large square ice cube mold, like a rubber mold.
Mm-hmm.
And she put all the food in this, get it hard in the freezer, then take them out, put them in Ziploc. And then she has all the different Ziploc with the spinach puree, the broccoli puree, the sweet potato puree, the pumpkin puree, the she can have carrots and turnips and any kind of thing, celery. And so it's all separated. Every flavor is separated, and sometimes it's chunky, sometimes it's puree. And same with the fish. She cooked two big fillet of fish or three, and then that's enough to make at least for six or seven meal. But then she don't want to. And the rotation of the meal is about every week and a half. She has a rotation of 10 different meal, 20 meal. She has a rotation of 20 meal, but you know, two a day, which are different. And then she come back to it again.
That's a great idea, you know, and I'm sure many of my listeners will appreciate that.
And I think what's important is to be able to treat the vegetable as fresh as possible and to make it consistent and tasty. And frankly, where to feed him is very simple. You just take and let it thaw, and it's ready within half an hour if you want to start to warm it up. Or not even. And at home, people are struggling and challenged by what am I going to cook for him tonight?
Right, right.
And,
it really makes it easy to have that
ahead of
time.
I'm very impressed. And she's also working as to become a nutritionist for children. So she's very passionate about that and pay very attention on that.
Uh-huh. And while he's just newly experiencing these foods, you said you're keeping most of the flavors separate. Are you using herbs and spices to change them?
Oh, no, but then after
we
mix them after we take one cube of one thing, one cube of the other, one cube of the other, and we make a little cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you're keeping the flavor of the vegetable kind of pure for him to experience it, correct?
Very much, and also I don't think it tastes good if that was all. Plus, we can vary the diet by using maybe carrots, and let's say we want to do carrots and green beans, but then after we want to do green beans and celery or something. So we can vary the flavor within the same one vegetable or two. It's basically you can create a cocktail of flavor and taste once you have the base set up.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great, and it's a wonderful tip for parents. You know, I tell them even when you're not just doing kids' food, when you're doing your real meals, you know,
absolutely,
for your growing family, you know, to make twice as much and put half in the freezer so for
absolutely
one of those nights when you don't have time to cook.
But it's very important to put that in the freezer. Then when you want to take out, you take out the right proportion, because
right,
it's about also being able to control a little bit what you want your kid to eat.
Right.
But yeah. The home cooking at home, the of course, if I'm preparing a meal at home and we're having dinner, it's going to have that dinner. But it's not every day that I cook at home because I'm working in the restaurants and we eat with my wife at different time. And because I live right above the restaurant, I often have a meal from the restaurant at my own schedule. So.
Right, I'm sure.
Voila.
Well, that's convenient. Just run upstairs and run back mm-hmm. down. Good work.
Thank you.
So going back to the professional kitchen,
yeah.
Today's kitchen is a multicultural community. Your employees are from different backgrounds, and although you're saying a majority of them now are American, how important do you feel the classic French training that you had, how important do you feel like that is for people that you're hiring now?
Well, the people who want to come and work with me have studied a little bit my style of cooking, the restaurant I have, the work we do, but also I wrote a book called Letter to a Young Chef, and this was kind of also a message to young chef about where I stand on cooking and what my good advice is for them to stand at the beginning on cooking. Of course, we have, like you say, multicultural communities working with us. And it's very exciting because first we want them to listen and practice and do exactly what we ask them to do. We don't leave them room for creativity, but we have the staff meal every day. We feed about 140 people, 50 people every day at Danielle. And so we have the staff meal, and we want every chef to be able to participate in a staff meal and be creative. They can bring their own ethnicity, they can bring their own style if they want, and all that. That's always very motivating. But it's very important, and our responsibility for us is really to be able to train a young chef in a way that it's going to be a foundation, a guiding light. I don't expect them to do my cooking once they leave me or once they become a chef, but I expect them to understand the rule of cooking so they can really succeed themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like people used to go into cooking without the expectation of becoming famous years ago, and now I think so many chefs go into it really expecting to become a famous chef. What do you say to them? I know I've experienced
some
of that.
Well, I think what I say to them is that don't believe because you have people following you on Instagram and you have been for 5 minutes on TV and you have been noticed. Don't believe that this is your success. This is you're going to have to work. I mean, even for me, after all this year, maybe more than 40 years of cooking, I don't take anything for granted. I don't beam about anything. I just feel blessed and thankful that people appreciate what we do, what I do, what my team do. But there's nothing worse than someone who thinks that he choose cooking because he wants to be successful, not successful, famous.
Right. Well, it's so true. I mean, I'm around a lot of young people, and with the Instagram, I mean, their goal in life is to, get a lot of followers and, build
that
platform.
That's the mirror, the false mirror, you know what I mean?
Right, absolutely.
It is really, there'll always be somebody better than you coming behind you. So just be who you are and be good at it. That's what's important. And not be, not be distracted also. I think it's very important. What's very important for young people also, they have to understand, young chef and anyone who wants to enter the food business, is that you have to find a mentor and you have to work and respect and really worship that mentor, and to the point where it's going to become an opportunity for you to work for that person. And I think for anyone who hasn't found a mentor, it's going to be very difficult to move on in a very strong way in life.
Mm-hmm. I think that's humbling and really great advice. Really great mm-hmm. advice. Chef, let's take a couple-minute break, and we come back. I want to talk about how you are constantly changing your menus and making them more relevant for today's different dietary trends and
Absolutely.
Things like that.
Absolutely.
So, everyone, you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm talking with Chef Daniel. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
PRN, 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so thrilled today to have with me as my guest, Chef Daniel Boulud, from the restaurant Danielle and many, many more restaurants. Chef,
yes,
are you with me?
Yes, we.
Great. So right before our break, I wanted to touch on how you are constantly changing your menus to make them more relevant with all the different food trends that are happening today. What do you do about that?
I think I always been a contemporary chef, relevant, but with always an understanding of classic cuisine. But mostly my cooking has always been driven by season, driven by the market, driven by ingredients, driven by farmers, local supply, and sometimes even not so local supply, but at least by beautiful ingredients. I have 6 restaurants in New York. We have 8 restaurants all over the world, or 9. And so we think differently for each place we are. And it's something where it always starts with what are the ingredients available within that particular location. What are the season of, let's say, Toronto or Montreal is different than Palm Beach or Miami. So it's obvious that you think differently as well. But there's also among the 15 restaurants, we all have access to the recipe. Every chef everywhere of my restaurant, the chef de cuisine, have access to any recipes. And so we want that to cross-pollinate around among the restaurants. Sometimes a recipe created at Daniel will inspire a chef. The combination, the technique will inspire a chef in Singapore, but he will treat it differently because he's working in a DB Bistro, Singapore, and it's a little bit different than Daniel. But also every restaurant have a style, and they have to respect that. But what's very important, I think, is the evolution of the menu and, of course, the importance we give to vegetarian menus. We, at Daniel, for example, we have a tasting menu who is vegetarian, and we always had that for a long time. I always cook with a lot of vegetable in my cuisine, and so it's really... it's a second nature for me to be able to do things with vegetable, and I love it, really. Creativity come, for example, we have at Daniel now, it's a four-course menu. So you choose from three savory courses, and let me give you a sense of a dish. So great. It would start with a Long Island fluke with sea urchin, so sea urchin from Maine, Granny Smith apple, seaweed crisp, white sturgeon caviar. So there is a cured fluke with citrus and with apple and celery a little bit. And it has an acidity and a fruitiness and a brightness to it. And we have it's a sashimi of fluke. And we have a little bit of sea urchin with it. We have a little bit of caviar. We have some peel of celery. We have some peels of apple, which means very thin slice of that. And then we have a little foam of celery and green celery and apple juice. We make a little foam of that on top. And then we have kind of a light, very refreshing apple and celery juice around, almost like a dressing. And a little bit of caviar. So it's very delicate. It has enough acidity for the fish. It has enough freshness, lightness. It's bright, it's crisp, it's fresh, and it's a wonderful starter.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have dishes more classic, like lobster angelée, where we make a lobster stock with a head of lobster, and then we put the slice of lobster in a little capsule of gelée made with the stock. And then it has a little cauliflower mousseline, a lime vinaigrette, and some cauliflower pickled and a little bit of different type of cauliflower. And so this is delicate on the lobster. There's its brininess. There's a little bit of sweetness on the cauliflower mousseline. And we have all kind of different dishes. And it can move to a monkfish which is wrapped and seasoned with a little bit of paprika and... then is served in a broth of British Columbia honey mussel, very beautiful, briny and sweet. And then we play on the bitter, on the sweet, on the spicy, and the savory. And so there is the brininess of the mussel, and then we use Castelfranco radicchio. Castelfranco, it's couple of form of radicchio and the red tardivo as a sort of bitter greens kind of the tardivo, and then we use piquillo pepper, light marmalade of that as a sweet vegetable, and the sauce mouclade, it's a little bit of a light, very light cream of mussel, and so it really has element of freshness, sweetness, brininess, spiciness, and bitterness to that. And I think it's really, every bite is a contrast. And I think that's why we try to create, it's to marry vegetables who will really go well together and empower the dish, but also empower the dish with flavor, with texture, with taste. is very important. And then you could finish maybe with a bison. Right now we have a bison, and it's based on the Tornado Rossini, where the Tornado Rossini is basically a tornado of beef with a slice of foie gras on top. But here it's much lighter. We have the High Plain from the High Plain buffalo, where it's roasted. And then there's a very thin toast, and on that are dots of foie gras and black truffles to nourish the meat underneath. And then on the bed of spinach, but the spinach, I have young spinach with a little bit of sweet onion, and then after it's mixed with a marmalade of spinach, like almost like a puree of spinach, very dense spinach, and not too creamy, not too heavy, not too buttery. And then we mix the braised spinach, the braised greens and spinach with that marmalade, and then so that give a very intense green flavor underneath, and then shaved black truffle. So it's earthy, it's really veggie, earthy, and the meat is the rich protein. It's delicious. It's really special.
Now, when you source meat, as you know, I personally don't eat meat, but many of my listeners do, and many of them don't. So I have two questions. Mm-hmm. One, I would be interested in what a vegetarian alternative might be for that tasting menu. And then I'm also interested in, in this country, it's a real challenge to source high quality meat, to find meat that is antibiotic free, hormone free,
of course,
where the animals are not fed genetically modified grains.
Of course, but that, that's our responsibility, and we work a lot. Like, for example, the buffalo, we work directly with a farm in Utah and in the state of the High Plain. Where we work directly with a farm there, and they ship us direct, and we know the people who run this program, and it's really, really incredibly high quality. And the squab, they come from Pennsylvania. We know the farmer; he brings them himself.
Right.
The bison, the squab, the we have a suckling pig. We use from Canada, from Quebec, and I've been to the farm myself, and it's the work they do with it is exquisite. It's not a suckling pig; it's a porcelet. It's a little bigger than that,
right?
And then
right.
So we basically know every suppliers who are supplying our menus, and that's very, very important.
Yeah,
we trust our suppliers. They know it, and we never argue the price. We don't buy with a price in mind. We buy with a quality in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then vegetarian,
that's so important, especially in this country, because there's just so much crap.
Absolutely. And our menu, so the menu is composed, for example, I'm taking example of Danielle, but I have so many different restaurants. At Café Boulou, I opened 18 years ago Café Boulou in New York on 76 and Madison. And we always had four different menus, and one of them is a vegetarian menu. And so it's not like I've gone to the vegetable bandwagon, the vegetarian bandwagon yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I did it already 18 years ago, and I wrote many cookbooks, and many of them are with a lot of recipe for vegetable. And we have at Danielle, for example, our vegetarian menu, just a la carte with a four-course prefix, we have a choice of 12 different dishes to choose from. And they are all vegetarian. Some of them are composed from the style of cooking we do with other dishes, and some of them are created for the particular. For example, we have a dish on artichokes, and it's a tasting of artichokes with ravioli. There's a ravioli, there's a smoked paprika, cream, and minor lettuce salad. And we have something with leeks, where there's a warm leek salad with black truffle dressing. We have an endive stuffed butternut squash with smoked chanterelle custard and a pleasant rich sage cream. So it has a very It's, of course, sometimes it has a pinch of cream or pinch of butter, but that, I think, it's part of making food tasty. And it's not about dairy-free. And I mean, I'm not running a clinic, but I do love to cook with vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do if you have, you know, when you have customers come in that are more fussy with different food issues, if they're
vegan
or gluten-free?
Well, it's not a question of being fussy. I think it's a question of my daughter is gluten-free. She's also, I mean, on certain lactose, she could be intolerant. So we understand that. And I always understand that. And we have, you know, we are very, very careful with any allergy, anything. And the customer, he has the right to claim then he don't like something or don't want something or cannot eat something. So we just try to be very, very responsive and very, very helpful. And that's our responsibility. We are here to make people happy, and no one is equal, so we deal with it.
Oh, that's good. So someone could come to Danielle and be vegan and be able to eat there without
a
problem.
Oh, yeah, no, even vegan, absolutely. Absolutely. No, we have a very extensive clientele, very international, and I tell you, a lot of people from the Indian community, Pakistani community, and Afghanistan, all that, who are vegan and who are true vegan, and they come here because they trust us and they love what we do. And a lot of vegetarian people also love Restaurant Danielle because we do a lot of great thing with vegetable, and it makes people feel very special when something is very delicate and beautiful, and there was, you know, it was not just, oh, they are vegetarian, let's toss a few vegetables and put it on the plate.
Right, right. Those days hopefully are over. Good. Now, you also have a strong commitment to philanthropy, and I'm so happy to learn about that. You're co-president of City Meals on Wheels.
Yes.
And under your leadership, you've started quite a few really interesting programs. Can you share those with my listeners?
Yes. So I've been co-president of City Meal for 6 years, and I've really been involved for 30 years with City Meals. Every year, many, many chefs are involved with the programs, raising money, or I started a program also. So City Meal serve 18,000 meals within the five boroughs of New York every day. And so I felt then it would be great to ask many of the chefs in New York, and including my chef in each one of my restaurants, to prepare hundreds of meals and deliver those meals to the elderly, to really understand what City Meal is about and what it means to those people to receive a warm meal every day. And so it's called Chef Deliver, and we have this wonderful program. And now we have been very successful with that. I have a van in New York who is running around New York. My partner made a gift to me, not to me, to City Meal, but say, I would like to buy a van for City Meal to make sure that those Chef Deliver meal is delivered with that van. So every month we have a group of chefs doing it, and the van is running around the city with all the name of the chef participating. But besides that, every year we do a gala at Danielle, and this Sunday coming, there's the gala for 160, 180 people we're going to be at Danielle. And we have already raised $500,000, and we're going to hope to raise three-quarter, maybe $1 million, who knows, but at least it's very good. There will be a lot of support and meals for them.
That's great.
And how do
people find out about this work?
Well, I think is you go online on citymealonwheel.org, and you can see the program for that. I think it's nobody can come on the gala because it's already sold out. But there's many other events, like, for example, the 6th of June, there's the very big event at Rockefeller Center where we have a fantastic roast of chefs. There's about 30 chefs cooking in the entire Rockefeller Center Plaza. And it's really a fun moment there.
That's also a fundraiser?
It's a fundraiser as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, great. Well,
and
I'll
so,
certainly add that to my list.
citymealonwheel.org.
Uh-huh. Great. And one last question that I had for you. I know there's a lot of movement towards no tipping, you know, trying to level the playing field of the workers in the restaurants. How do you feel about that whole issue?
Well, I think we, like everybody else, we are very concerned about change, and we will not make any change unless it's a positive change for everyone. But we do definitely, you know, equalize the field. Is it going to be the true reality even if the tip change? No, we take care of our people very well. We take care of our staff very well, and we make sure that everybody is compensated properly. And I think the if the law said and now tips are distribution are changing, then we'll follow the law. But until then, we are trying to be actively present in what's happening, so we understand what could happen or what's not going to happen. But
right.
I believe, you know, America was founded on the system is neither wrong neither right sometimes, but it is like that. So we have to definitely see. I don't think in 10 years from now or 20 years the system will be the same. Things will change, especially at high-end restaurants where it's really about a common goal together, the front and the back.
Right.
The front
right.
could not succeed the way they succeed without the amazing strength and talent and power of the back of the house.
Right. Teamwork is a team.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think it's fair that the front should benefit for everything because the back, the chef, the reputation of the restaurant is based on the food, and the chefs are bringing the customer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely,
it's a catch-22, and we are in a way, and you know, we live with passion, and we want the front of the house to live with passion as well, to do this job as a real profession, and not just an opportunity to make a buck right now because they want to do something else later.
Right. Well, Chef, thank you so much for joining us. It's been absolutely wonderful. Everyone out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network with Chef Daniel Balud. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bhavani. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chef. Everyone out there, have a great rest of the week, and I'll be with you again next week. Bye for now.